Welcome back to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, Eastern Utah's home for the Utah Jazz.
Time for that Monday NBA basketball talk. Look forward to this each week. And I think this is the best time of the year for the NBA. I know a lot of casuals, lighthearted fans, you look forward to Christmas Day. That's kind of when the season tips off. Maybe even MLK. For me, it's right around this time of the year. You hit that 20-game mark and you really start to get a vibe for what teams are. And I still think there are a couple of good surprises. Jazz fans, maybe not too happy with the fact that teams lost 7 out of their last 10. But I do believe this is more along the lines of what we're going to see from the squad. We'll talk about the Jazz. We'll talk about the Dallas Mavericks as well, who are going to bring in Kemba Walker to try to bolster some depth. We'll bring in James Holas. He joins us every Monday to talk NBA basketball. He's one half of the Dunk Tales pod. James, always a pleasure. I appreciate the time again. Hopefully you had a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah, man. I took myself to the Brazilian Steakhouse. I gorged myself on delicious meat. And then I spent the next 2 days regretting it. So here I am talking basketball.
Well, let's talk about it. And as I just mentioned a moment ago, the Dallas Mavericks is a bad basketball team right now. And yeah, I think you look at the offseason, the fact that they really didn't have a viable option to replace Jalen Brunson, and we're starting to see that right now. Now, they go out and they grab Kemba Walker. I don't know what type of Kemba Walker they are going to get. Low risk, high reward, no question about it. But really, this is the problem for the Mavericks. And you and I were talking off of the cuff, and we're on the same wavelength. When Luka is not on the floor, this team is bad, and it's unsustainable to take a guy like Luka and average 38-40 minutes a game. You can't do it. Dallas needs to do something to fix this. They've lost 7 out of 10, 4 consecutive games. They go out, they grab Kemba Walker.
Yeah, I mean, they're 6-7 the last 13. They allowed their only, I guess they thought Dinwiddie could do a decent job, and Dinwiddie is like trick-or-treat, right? I feel like he's either flaming hot or he's ice cold, very little in between. And yeah, they let Luka's running mate just walk out the door over, you know, a few million dollars, and it's unacceptable. When you got a guy like Luka, I'm not the biggest Luka fan. I can admit he's a generational offensive player. You got to give him help. And they had a guy, you know, Brunson is worth $25 million a year in today's market, and they let him walk. So now they're in an unenviable position where none of the other guys have a lot of value as far as, hey, we're going to package three of these guys to get somebody a better. This is not going to work, right? Nobody's going to take Dorian Finney-Smith and Tim Hardaway Jr. and give you somebody who's like a high-level player. So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do, but it is what it is. I think, you know, we saw Dirk and the company win a championship. We saw Cuban let Tyson Chandler leave right after that. And this is kind of like the same kind of thing where the ownership got cheap when they have a franchise type player entering their prime.
When you talk about making roster improvements, one of the other aspects you have to talk about when you start hovering around December, December 15th is a key day for a lot of teams because that's when a lot of players become trade eligible. And I think you're 100% right. I don't know what direction the Mavericks go. This may be a team that has to wait for a buyout market. And I don't know if this team can wait that long. I mean, they have to rely on Kemba Walker to actually come in and provide some sort of competency to relieve Luka. But when you take a look at it, league-wide, December 15th, who should be the main teams licking their chop for that particular day?
Man, you put me on the spot. Obviously Dallas.
No doubt.
The Lakers could definitely use an upgrade. I know Charlotte has to do something, whether they jettison some salary and maybe free up some room with, you know, moving some guys like Gordon Hayward. And obviously, a team like Indiana, you know, even though they're playing pretty well, I think they've been one of my pleasant surprises. Dallas really is the only one that really comes to mind because Luka, it's glaring how much, you know, that whole heliocentric offense, it just can't, like you just said, it's not sustainable.
There are some other teams out there that are starting to come back down to earth. I mentioned the Utah Jazz. That's one team. Another team that's on the up and up, and it shouldn't be a surprise. The Golden State Warriors have now won 7 of 10 games. But I want to talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves for a moment. It's a team that I think a lot of Jazz fans keep an eye on just because of the big deal in the offseason with Rudy Gobert. This isn't working, James. This is not a good basketball team. Maybe December 15th, this is a team that should look to do something. I don't know what they can do. I think they're hamstrung a little bit with some of the moves they made in the offseason. But this is not working. This is not not a good team. 10-10 for the Timberwolves. This is not what they anticipated going into the season. I do believe it's going to get that maybe time heals a little bit, but in the same sense, I don't like this team. I watch them. I'm not entertained. On the defensive side of the ball, they're giving up like 115 a game. That's one of the most in the Western Conference. They're not fun and enjoyable to watch, and they're not good.
So much, this is a perfect illustration and like a textbook example of how much context of a team and personnel of a team matter to how we view players. So Rudy Gobert went from this generational defender, and you could be the tent post of any kind of defense, and he elevates the floor of a team because he has scorers around him, and he really has to worry about anything but, you know, blocking shots and protecting the rim and dunking. And now that tremendous contract looks like such an albatross when you pair him with another big guy and not a lot of shooting, and you strip the roster down just to trade for him, and now it looks like a joke. And Carl Anthony Towns, generation shooting big man, he looks like a joke playing with Rudy Gobert. If you're gonna pay a big man max money, he better be Embiid or Jokic, because now we see these two onerous contracts, these two just terrible contracts, and the team looks like they're stuck in mud. And then your best player, Anthony Edwards, in the future, he has no driving lanes because you got all these big men and not a lot of shooting space in the floor for him. It's just, like you said, it's just been a comedy of errors. And this might go down literally as the worst trade of all time because they gave up a haul to get Rudy Gobert. They're paying Rudy Gobert like superstar franchise type money. And are they below 500 right now? They look very subpar.
They are 500 at 10-10. If you're a Timberwolf fan, it's got to be frustrating to watch this team. And I'm not a big guy. I always try to stay away from hyperbole and never being a prisoner in the moment. But when you talk about this trade potentially being one of the worst of all time, yeah, I mean, they mortgaged the future, James, and they are paying Gobert superstar, generational talent money, and they've gotten worse.
Gotten worse because, again, like it's, sometimes the team is about, you know, the collection of talent, and they had a lot of young, they had wings, they had switchable guys, and, you know, they actually played hard. They had a lot of grit and soul. And now I'm not a big fan of the makeup of the team. They gutted their future. They gave up their picks. Gobert had the ball three feet from the hoop with Draymond Green just standing there holding his position with his hands up, and he passed the ball back out as the Golden State Warriors were pulling away. And it was almost like a microcosm what we're talking about, because the Warriors just kind of, you know, passed and shot and moved the ball and racked up points, and the Timberwolves were just stuck in mud. So it's kind of sad. I feel bad for Anthony Edwards.
Again, James Hollis, our guest right now, half of the Dunk Tales pod. We'll talk about that in just a moment. James, your Boston Celtics right now, 16-4, best record in the NBA. And, I mean, yeah, you can make a case for Milwaukee, although they haven't played great basketball. I know that there's some variables there you got to consider on the injury front. Boston's best team in the NBA right now. I think when I watch around the league, I don't see a better team front to back than the Boston Celtics through 20 games.
And I appreciate that. I'm very cautiously optimistic, but Boston right now is deep. Their bench was once a weakness, and now it's a strength with the addition of Malcolm Brogdon and the resurgence, or I guess the surgeons, because most people never heard of him, Sam Hauser. Yeah, Boston, like, you know, they didn't skip a beat. New coach, a couple new players, and they're still rolling. No starting center, and they're incredible. Once they get Robert Williams back, I'm like I said, cautiously optimistic. The Bucks, like you said, no Chris Middleton yet, and they have like the corporate knowledge, you know, the intestinal fortitude and the belief in Giannis, and Giannis is amazing. But as far as like, you know, your top 8, 9, 10 players, I can't see a team really stepping up with Boston right now.
No, I mean, right now in the Eastern Conference, I honestly feel like it's Boston, Milwaukee, and then everyone else. And when I look at the Western Conference, I don't get that vibe from anyone. I mean, I watch the Phoenix Suns. I want to believe in this team. I still think there's some discord there. DeAndre Ayton does not appear to be happy. There are times, man, this guy looks lost out there on the floor. The Nuggets are playing better basketball. The Grizzlies are playing pretty good basketball. The Pelicans, I just think there's a significant drop-off. And I like the Clippers. I still believe this is one of the deepest teams in the league, but they haven't proven they could stay healthy. The Western Conference, to me, it's a cluster, it's a log jam, and then you look at the East, and I think you got two top dogs. That's my assessment through 20 games. I know it's short, I know it's vague, but I see two top teams in Boston and Milwaukee, and then I see everybody else trailing the pack.
Yeah, you nailed it. Phoenix has been playing really, really well, you know, but they're still 8-5 in their last 13, And, yeah, without Chris Paul, without Jay Crowder, they definitely have, you know, they're kind of falling back in the pack. 100% the Golden State Warriors might be on the launch pad right now after that really rough start. Klay Thompson is looking a lot more like Klay Thompson. And they've scaled back the minutes for the young boys, and they're actually trying to play rotation winning minutes. But, yeah, Boston is the most complete team in the NBA. Milwaukee's still Milwaukee. The Nets are a joke. You know, the Nuggets are, you know, they're still Jokic, but their defense seems to have slipped a little bit. Cleveland has fallen back to earth. Yeah, it's actually probably good for the league, though. A lot of competition, a lot of parity right now as teams try to, like, you know, break away from the pack.
Parity, I think, is a good thing. I mean, when we talk NFL, the NFL kind of prides itself on parity. The NFL doesn't want dynasties. The NFL punishes teams for drafting well. That's the way that salary cap is designed. And look, they're top dog in this country. I think when you look at the NBA, parity is a great thing because even though the Brooklyn Nets are a mess, people are still going to pay money to go out and watch Kevin Durant. Even the Lakers are a mess, people are still going to pay money to go out and watch LeBron James. Parity is not a bad thing in the NBA at all. We have that so far.
100%, because, I mean, it's not fun watching some teams smoke other teams by 20 points every night or watching half the league lose by 15 every night. The fact that almost on any given night, more than ever, we can, you know, we don't know how the outcome of a team is going to be. Hey, the other night, the Timberwolves were up, I think, 10 at one point on Charlotte and ended up losing that game. The other night, the Hawks were up 14 in the third on the lowly Rockets, and the Rockets came back and won that game. So, yeah, it's you know, it makes for a lot more enjoyable product when you don't turn the game at halftime because one team's down 50.
I'm glad you brought up the Atlanta Hawks because this is why I love having conversations with you. You'll mention a team and something pops up into my head. When I look at Atlanta, a lot of people were high on this team coming into the season. Not a lot of people pay close enough attention, I don't think, to divisions in the NBA. They are in first place in the Southeast Division, for whatever that's worth, 11-9 squad. If you look at the Rockets game, you look at the Heat game, I mean, Bam just absolutely obliterated the Hawks just last night. So, I mean, when you look at this team, if they were deemed a contender, they have not looked it over the last week and a half.
So, yeah, that's the thing about them, and we'll give them the caveat of injury again. Clint Capella's been out for a few games now, and he means a lot to them. But, yeah, they've marginalized John Collins. I think DeJounte Murray and Trae Young statistically have been fine, but, you know, that might not be a case of 1+1=3. Not a lot of synergy there. Their role, Bogdanovic is out for them, too. Bogey's still out for them. So, yeah, they have injury concerns, too, but they definitely have not found their groove. They're one of the worst three-point shooting teams by volume and, I think, percentage in the league. They just haven't looked good. You know, the Celtics handled them pretty easily. That loss to the Bad Rockets, they just something just seems to be kind of missing there. And me and you talk about this a little bit sometimes. Something about the soul of a team, right, the guts of a team. The Nets don't have any guts, and sometimes, like, hey, Atlanta was doing a lot of woofing the other night against the Rockets, and the Rockets got pissed off and came back and beat them. That's a gutless thing. So, yeah, they got to figure it out in Atlanta because right now they've already made some moves to cut costs, and they might be doing that again.
When we talk about the soul of a team, I think it kind of falls along the lines, maybe not the grand scheme of things, but here's an aspect of that, right? Like, this is a tree. If we were looking at the soul of a team as a tree, one of the branches is having a player that fans of 29 other fan bases absolutely hate, but that fan base absolutely loves, right? I think most teams have to have a guy like that. Draymond has been that guy in Golden State. I think most teams have to have a guy like that. It kind of falls along the same lines as the soul.
100%, and that's why a team like the Celtics, for a long time, they kept trying to look for another star. When Marcus Smart is not the star, but he's the heart of that team, the heartbeat, the pulse. Draymond Green, I think that was a big issue with them, and maybe they're getting it solved now. That whole, you know, you sucker punch a teammate, and you kind of fracture the trust amongst the guys, and it showed in their early play. You know, now they're starting to show a little more unity as the team settles in, and Draymond's getting back to being a little more Draymond. And yeah, every team needs a guy like that. And I wonder a team like the Clippers. I love the Clippers talent-wise, even without Kawhi and Paul George. But who is that one kind of emotional guiding leader? Same thing with the Nets. Who is that one guy that, like, is not afraid to get other guys' faces and getting the refs' face? But it's coming from a place of actual, like, intense competitiveness. I don't see that on some teams, and it shows.
He's James Hollis again, half of the Dunk Tales Pod. James, I'll give you a chance to talk about the Dunk Tales Pod because, again, you hit the 20-game mark of the NBA season. A lot more topics to dive into. I've had a chance now to listen to the podcast over the last month or so. Great stuff as always. Please tell us where we can find it.
Thanks, man. We're on all streaming platforms. We actually just dropped an episode about the 20-game mark and about who we kind of believed in and who we thought might be fraudulent. We're on all platforms. The Dunk Tales, that's T-A-L-E-S. You can find me on Twitter, at Snotty Drippin, and my co-host, my cohort, my homie, at JP. But just find me and then find him through me because it's too much to spell his stuff. But, yeah, we have fun once a week, and we're going to get you on one day soon.
Looking forward to it, James. Always a pleasure to get you on. Can't wait for next Monday. Thank you again.
My man, always appreciate you. Thank you.
We're going to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll talk some college football now that the regular season is complete, and we know the Utah Utes are going to the Pac-12 Championship this Friday to take on USC. A lot of fun college football talk. Coming up next right here on Drive Time Sports.